What's up, guys? This is Uriah Faber, the California Kid, here with Greg Conley, serial entrepreneur, founder of Trifecta Nutrition. We're talking about everything under the sun, fitness, entertainment, and of course, business, making that money. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Cali Cast. Got my boy Greg Conley here and a very special guest. And first off, I don't think I've met someone named Christmas before. I feel like your parents, you described them as a little bit of a motorcycle fanatics, but I feel like they knew you were going to be someone in the limelight, somebody to be kind of famous more and more every day, what it seems. We've got Christmas Abbott here, and she's talking all sorts of cool stuff recently on Big Brothers, CrossFit, her books, and much more. So thanks for coming, and you know, I think California is a good spot for you. What's up? How's the trip been to Cali, and are you ready to move yet?
The trip has been great, and I've been ready to move for a while. I love the California feel. You know, I'm an East Coast girl, so don't go ahead and
don't get it twisted.
I'm an East Coast girl, love it, but I'm ready for a little bit of a change. And okay. You know, that won't happen for a little while, but I'm definitely looking at places.
Yeah, I came in earlier, and Greg was doing his best sales pitch, and he's a very good salesman to come out to Cali. I don't think that's a very hard sell. Although North Carolina is a pretty impressive place.
Thank you. Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, we have islands with wild horses, and we have an international airport, so that's good. we're not all back road bumpkins. But I'll tell you what, we produce some strong people in those back road farming locations.
Hillbillies or redneck? What would be the best? I'm just joking.
We have all.
I've been to many beach communities in North Carolina, which are shocking. I've seen like a flock of dolphins just outside the door jumping up, you know, having fun. And I'm like, that was not what I was thinking of when I was thinking North Carolina. We had a chance to look at some of the K-Swiss commercials I did with Kenny Powers, and that was out there in North Carolina, and pleasantly surprised by the beauty of North Carolina, but it is no California. So let's get a little history of you, Christmas. Obviously, you're an athlete, most recently coming off of Big Brother and had a lot of success there. I know we have some fans in the audience here, actually one woman audience that want to know the inside scoop, so we'll get to that, but What was your upbringing? What was it all about? How'd you become an athlete? How'd you become someone that sticks out? How'd you become such a personality?
Thanks. I'll give you the abridged version because I can start talking and hijack this entire podcast.
We want the details. Give us the details.
This is your time to shine.
So like you said, my parents were Rolling Stones. They were biker hippies. You know, they just kind of went with the flow, and to no fault of their own, that's the kind of environment that I grew up in initially. So their fitness was not even known in my life. And it's in my blood to rebel. And so when I was 13, I got into a major car accident, and that was my excuse to just do whatever I wanted. You know, like I got hurt, my sister.
What do you mean it was excuse to do whatever you wanted?
I used it as an excuse to be a victim of my circumstances. So because of that tragic event, and because I was in this turmoil, emotional and physical damage, then I was just like, well, I shouldn't care, because if I care, then I give more of myself, and I don't have that to give right now. And I think, you know, adolescence is a tough time, and then on top of that, you put in this really big tragedy.
What happened in the accident?
My sister, myself, and a friend were in the car. The friend was driving, and the car rolled seven times, flipped twice.
It
looked like a compounded car. They used the jaws of death or the jaws of life to cut my sister and myself out. My sister was actually thrown out of the car. She broke two lower vertebrae in her back. They said that she was, they were like, she's not going to live through this.
Oh, man.
So they let me see her that night in the hospital. I walked out with whiplash and a lot of emotional scarring. When my sister had to learn how to walk, she had short-term memory damage. She, you know, she was my idol. We were so poor that we actually slept in the same bed. We had wood heat, and like we just didn't have the means to, we had enough to sustain. And then, so you develop these relationships, and that's the richness that you have in your life.
So you said she had that obviously worse effects than you did at the time.
Yes.
Did she recover from that?
She did. So they were like, well, she's not going to survive this night, so you got to go say bye to her. And I saw her that night.
Oh, my gosh.
And then, you know, she was in a coma for a week, and then she woke up immediately hungry. I'm like, that's my sister. She was like, give me a McDonald's burger.
You're like, she's going to make it.
She was 16 at the time. I was 13, so we didn't know anything about nutrition. And, you know, slowly but surely, she just surpassed everything, that any limitation that the doctor would give her.
Wow.
And that's so awesome. She ended up working construction, and she's been in the construction industry for over 20 years now.
That's incredible.
She's like, my family has some bad bitches.
I don't know if you know this. My sister had a similar accident. It was a 6-car pileup. She had, when was in a coma for 7 days, she had to have her skull removed for nearly 2.5 months, and it was like a whole year of recovery. Yeah. Short-term memory, had to relearn a lot of different things. So I know how scary that is. I mean, that was a trying time for everyone. And it's funny because my sister, you know, I feel like after she recovered, she was able to appreciate life a little bit more. I feel like sometimes she would, you know, pour me at times, and it gave her a new perspective on things. Yeah. And we were very lucky that she completely recovered. Now she's married, working 2 jobs, and she's beautiful. But what a scary time. And then she had to have surgery, had the skull removed, and then put it back on for the brain swelling. I mean, that puts things in a whole different perspective. It's interesting that what you took from it was I'm going to get wild.
Yeah, I went the complete opposite way. I'm going to get crazy. Yeah, so I well,
that can
was
be
like,
fun too, to be honest. Greg, you know
get,
that.
Get the most out of life. Yeah, exactly.
I will tell you that I had fun, but overall it was a lot more wrecking. So I stayed the course for almost 10 years.
Of being a wild child.
Wild. I mean, I'm still wild, but I made bad decisions. I make better decisions now.
We need to do one podcast called Christmas Bad Decisions, and you just tell us all the stories.
It'll
get
be a series.
Get some bold pictures out.
You don't have enough time for that.
That's awesome.
So when I was 20, I had just turned 22, and my mom was working in Iraq as a civilian contractor when the initial Operation Iraqi Freedom launched. And so for the first time, she was in the first wave of civilian contractors to be embedded with the military to provide logistic support for them. And so she told me, she was like, Christmas, you're going to love this. You should try it. And I was like, what am I going to do? I was actually rejected by the military when I was 18. I tried.
For what?
Health issues.
Oh, really?
Yes. Real health issues. And I didn't know there was waivers. So I have always wanted to serve. And at the time, this was the way that I could do it. And I went over, I promised myself a year. I ended up staying 4. And it completely transitioned my life. I was smoking, drinking, and doing really heavy drugs before I went. Went over there.
What kind of drugs are really kind of heavy drugs? Just so you can clarify this.
Full disclosure, in high school I was doing mushrooms, acid, drinking.
Holy smokes.
Coke. And at that point, right before I went over, I had been doing meth consistently for a while.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is this in your book?
It is not like full. It's a little bit. Like there's a summary of the story, but I was not yet comfortable with disclosing those minute details where, right, like, it's actually pretty impacting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's motivational. Absolutely. Hopefully you'll, you know, have more. I mean, you've done a couple books, but maybe you could do more down the road.
Because
I know
I'm trying to do a memoir right now.
This kind of
about
story
the...
can super be super influential for folks that are in
yeah,
the same
situation. People that are at that stage of their life are like, oh, wow, you know, she pulled it out and ended up having this amazing life
And it was almost a decade of debauchery, you know. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, I'm just gonna go in 6 months and kind of pull myself out. It was a long time, and people were like, well, how much trouble can you get into at 13? Well, at 13 I was drinking and smoking pot. That's how much, and it just kind of escalated from there. Mm-hmm. So I took this job and I had no idea what I was doing. I really was dumb, naive, stupid, and like putting myself into danger. 3 weeks into country, and this was in January or February 2004. What year was it? I don't remember. Anyway, they had incoming. We had a mortar round come into the campground that I was sleeping in, a couple hundred meters.
Oh, what was it?
A mortar round, so a rocket.
Okay. It's
like
mortar round. I thought
shoot.
You're talking about like a native person who I don't know what a mortar. That's like sound like something from a sci-fi movie. A mortaron came limping in the village.
A mortar.
That's a missile
round.
Ready to kill you.
Yeah. Yes, that is some sort of
a round
like flying
of
bomb.
Yeah, gotcha. it's like a bomb they shoot up in the
they
air.
They launch from the ground.
Christmas. We almost lost Christmas. Could you imagine all the little kids around the world? No more Christmas.
Oh, man. So that morning, I leaped out of bed. I did everything wrong. All of my training went out the window. And I looked around. And I was like, oh, my. I mean, it was an epiphany. In that second that I heard the whistle and then the boom from the crash of the mortar round, I just knew. I knew I had to change my life. I knew that I was on a path that was going to guarantee my death sooner than later.
Wow. That just
from
gave
my
me
own
goosebumps.
Decisions.
Mm-hmm. It really did. That's crazy.
It's humbling to recognize that, mm-hmm. and to know that you're the one responsible,
yeah.
for that, for where you are.
Yeah.
And you know, it still gets me worked up because I my mantra in life, and this is, I didn't go into fitness because I wanted to get fit or have a different aesthetic or anything else. I went into fitness because I was going to kill myself. Mm-hmm. There was no other choice. I was like, okay, drink, smoke, play poker, or go get on an elliptical and hate myself for 30 minutes. Okay. The lesser of two evils was go get on an elliptical for 30 minutes three times a week. Mm-hmm. And wow. Within a month, for the first time in my life, I was proud of my progress. I was proud of what I was doing. I felt a change inside of me. I actually was like happy.
And that's
so
crazy.
You
say that like
it
was so shocking.
It.
Believe it or not. I mean, that's a crazy epiphany to have. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was
it was elliptical 3 days a week, and that turned into an obsession and to
it
become
turned
one
into
of the best.
Knowing that I suddenly had the control to be able to provide something positive in my life, and that was my decision. And that's where my mantra for my entire legacy was born, was that every day you wake up with an opportunity to change your life. It's your decision. It doesn't have to be perfect. Right. Perfection is poison. And what you have to do is just make the better of the decision. Not perfect. Don't do it all at once. You will set yourself up for failure. But know that you can make that change, and that starts immediately.
Well, like, and part of your story that I love is you didn't go, okay, I'm going to make a change and I'm going to immediately go to like, oh, I'm training for the Olympia or the CrossFit Games or whatever. You were like, okay, I'm going to do, you know, elliptical three times a week or something. And you and I were talking about that a little bit before the podcast, which I love, which is, you know, for people that are trying to, you know, get in slightly better shape or change their life a little bit, it's like, okay, let's change a small percentage of it first, as opposed to being like, oh, I've decided I want to be a fighter. I'm going to try and, you know, win the belt in,
yes.
you know, the UFC. Like, you don't need to make a huge transition. You can just start doing the elliptical or, you know, eat a little bit healthier.
Fundamentals are essential.
You know.
Yeah. A lot of people want to skip the hard part. You know, you mm-hmm. understand this, basics. All of, you know, the fancy stuff comes from not perfecting, but, you know, being really consistent and fluent and virtuous with the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And the fundamental for me was just, like, get up and go. I mean, the first mile I ran ever as an adult took me about 12 to 15 minutes. I couldn't walk for
oh,
a week.
Wow.
I mean, like, I was inside on a treadmill. So you can set the treadmill pace to all you have to do is pick up your feet. You're not really running, you know?
Yeah.
And it rocked my world. I was like, fuck fitness. This is dumb.
Like,
who wants
dying.
To do this? But then looking at the alternative was like, I don't want to do that. So I talk about a life continuum, right? Or passion continuum. I started doing things that were better for me because I wanted to get away from that nasty lifestyle, because I wanted to, like, be different in a more positive way. But I didn't know that. I didn't have the self-worth at that time. And slowly, just by taking one step at a time, working the fundamentals and allowing my own timeline, not somebody else's projected timeline, and growing myself, then I got to the point where I wanted to be pulled towards those positives. Well, what else can I do? I found CrossFit. Well, what else can I do in CrossFit? Somebody pushed me into competing. I never thought I was a competitor. I showed up on the first day and I was like, I'm going to eat your soul. Something happened to me. Like, I became a different person that I didn't know was inside of me because I was willing to try something different. And I got there because of working the fundamentals and working that continuum, going away from something negative and then finally pulling myself towards a positive.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome theme. And I've seen it myself where you are basically having a little success, and you always have to celebrate those little successes. You know, mm-hmm. you did you ran a mile, you felt like crap, but you did the mile. You're excited for that.
Yeah.
Then you make the next step a little bit further. And, you know, it's one thing to do and then be like, all right, I did it, and be celebrating. And it's another thing to think in a whole different manner where you're saying, wow, I did that. Well, what can I do next? And the more you accomplish, the bigger your thought process gets. Mm-hmm. You know, I know Greg's talked about that in business also. You have a little success. You know, he's been an entrepreneur since he was a little kid. And, you know, you realize how you're making a buck. And like, well, how do I make $2 or how to make $3 bucks? And then the vision gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, when we talk about business, it's like, well, when we sell for 100-something million or we sell for this and that. And that's the same in the fitness world, the same in whatever you're attaining. It's like celebrating these little victories and then thinking bigger and thinking bigger and thinking bigger and then realizing I can do whatever the hell I want in this world. So that's cool to hear your story about it. And I mean, the adversity for me is the key part of that. I mean, for 10 years, making a decision in one direction and facing adversity. I know there had to be some crazy ups and downs in that time of debauchery where it was like, oh my gosh, what the heck am I doing? I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to, you know, run down a path where it's not going to be a long path, and then deciding the opposite way, but having the ability to look back on the negatives and be like, how much better is this? And even physically doing things and eating correctly and all that kind of stuff, that triggers things in your brains just like drugs do, you know. Yeah. Work out, more serotonin gets let go. And so you took a full shift, but took all the lessons into becoming what you are today, which is somebody that's inspiring and somebody that's, you know, professional and on national television and, you know, kicking butt in these competitions. I mean, it's really cool.
Thank you. I feel like I didn't go to college. Well, I didn't finish college, let me be clear. But the 4 years that I was in Iraq was like my life college. Mm-hmm. I found discipline, routine, structure, business savvy, fitness. I mean, it was really a completely...
School of hard knocks.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's where I got my degree.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So, no, keep going with the story. So you're in Iraq. Yeah, like, okay. I want to hear how...
And then suddenly I'm a CrossFit and Instafame and star.
She's like, a mortar shell went off and I was going to CrossFit games and on Big Brother. That's how it happened.
I had no aspirations to be an athlete. I just wanted to keep doing what made me feel good and what I loved. And when people ask me about how I got to be where I am, they think that the success happened overnight. This was in 2004. That I discovered, I had this epiphany. And, you know, so it is what you were saying, you know, you build on your foundation, you build on the small things, and it does move the whole mountain. So I started getting into CrossFit. I did it by myself for about a year, and then I found some guys that would do it with me. And it just, they made fun of me because they thought, I was like, I walked up to them in the DFAC, and you're like, hey, which is our cafeteria. And I'm like, hey, I heard you do CrossFit. Can I play with you? Because I think fitness is fun, right? It's adult recess. Have a good time with it. Stop taking it so seriously. And
so I find it hard to believe you got some guys to come play with you out in Iraq. Can you imagine that? Some hot chick walks up and asks you, hey, can we play together?
You'd be surprised. I mean,
it'd be hard to get guys to turn you down in that race, but go ahead.
Well, CrossFit wasn't popular then.
Okay.
There were the only
females
two guys.
In Iraq probably were popular then.
I was in the camp that I was in was a 600-man camp, give you an idea. There was about 7 women on base.
Exactly. Yeah. That's called camp syndrome, where you must have been like a pile of gold on a mountain.
I was kind of like the little sis. They protected me. They didn't chase me too bad. Maybe I was just kind of scary. I don't know. I have that effect on men. they're intimidated, right, not
we'll
inspired.
Take note. Mark that, please.
Yeah.
So did they, I mean, were they saying, oh, CrossFit's too hard for you? Or
No, they were like, sure, come on. And then I, years later, like 10 years later, I read this book, Learning to Breathe Fire, and they did a chapter on me in Iraq. And come to find out that they let me come train with them because they wanted to see how much I could take before they broke me. Like, wow. Before I decided mentally not to come back. And they didn't know that I was just going to keep showing up because it was better than the alternative.
What's the book called?
Learning to Breathe Fire.
Learning to Breathe Fire.
Mm-hmm. And basically it's a history of a lot of large influential people in CrossFit that got it started in the momentum. So the Greg Almondson, Greg, you know, just there's a lot of heavy hitters in that book. And there's a chapter, Christmas in Iraq.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know there's kind of a really strong military following and background, you know, behind CrossFit.
It's support so your troops even if you don't support
now.
The cause.
Yeah.
There's a difference, people. Yeah, I have a really strong admiration and respect for the military. I'm going to SHOT Show after this. Mm-hmm. And it's just really to hang out with my military friends that I worked with over there. And they've seen my transformation. They've seen, you know, my career and trajectory from going to this girl that I couldn't even do a body weight squat. You know, like it was really, really I was 95 pounds and couldn't lift a fly. And they've gotten to see my journey, which is cool. So I get to catch up with them at SHOT Show.
That's really awesome. Cool. And so badass is kind of a theme. You said, you know, your mom was saying we have some badass girls in our family. You have books, right?
Yeah.
And what are the names of the books?
So Badass Body Diet, it was a national bestseller, and it's been around 4 years now. And then Badass Life. So people were like, how do you create your mindset? How have you gotten so determined and focused? And so I just write down my experiences and what lessons I learned from them.
That's cool. So there, I mean, there's obviously an awareness that you're an influencer from early on. I feel like it's funny. You said the hippie parents that were into motorcycles. My parents were hippie Christians into health food and all about religion back in the day, living in a, you know, house. And I was born in a house in Isla Vista in the ghetto by the sea by Santa Barbara. This mentality of just, you know, no limits is kind of a theme that I feel with a hippie mentality. Like you just follow your dreams and this and that. Was that something that was taught, or is that something you have internally? Just to be able to, oh, I think I'm going to write a book. Oh, I think I'm going to, you know, do this. I'm going to go to Iraq. I mean, those are scary, badass things, and you're just doing them. Is that something that you think was learned, or something that was internal? Could you point to traits from your parents or influencers that like made you this go get it, I can accomplish anything type of person?
You know, I can definitely attribute that to my parents, in the sense of my dad. He's always been like, take no shit, chap. You know, like that's my dad, thanks. And my mom has always told me how much she knows that I'm made to do something special. She's like, you are here, she calls me the light. She's like, you are a light. And for me, I'm really the conduit. And this is the kind of acceptance that I've come to. It's like the bigger picture, I'm working, my legacy is bigger than me, right? That's something beautiful to be part of, is something bigger than you, which gives your life so much more purpose. And I get to influence, you know, hopefully millions of people. And it's not about me and what I can do. I'm just the part that's going to help jumpstart their acknowledgement that they have that power. And I think that that's a beautiful thing. So as long as we're celebrating the correct things, then we'll continue to reach like and positively influence others. But my mom always told me, she's like, Christmas, you're destined for great things. You know, she would always tell me, Christmas, you can be an athlete, you can be, you know, a role model, all these things. I'm like, yeah, right, mom. Like, you're my, you know, you're my mom. You're supposed to say these things. But I remember one pivotal moment is that I remember sitting at the kitchen table, and I did 2 years of sports. I was a cheerleader and I played baseball. I know, it's very much like me now. It's like super girly, but I will want to get dirty and fuck people up. You're gonna have
you're
to
like, I did the cheerleading
these.
Competition.
No, there's no bleeding. We got free reign on this.
So I wanted to play baseball because the ball fit my hand. And I was like, well, the softball is bigger. I don't want to play with that. I want to play with baseball. And I was 9 or 10. And she was like, okay. The league called my mom and said that I couldn't play baseball because I was a girl. And my mom was like, oh, really? They're like, well, what requirement do you have because she's a girl? Like, what's the difference? And they're like, well, and they try to, you know, they're scrambling for reasons. So they're like, well, our league says that you have to wear a cup. She goes, we'll get her a special bra. I didn't even have boobs then, you know? And so I remember she sat down with me and she goes, is this really what you want to do? Why do you want to play baseball? And I looked at her and go, well, the ball fits my hand. And that's, I didn't know anything else. I'm 9 or 10 years old.
That's funny.
And she calls them and she's like, my name is Barbara Abbott. You don't know me yet, but you will. I'm like, okay. And she proceeds to tell them that unless they can come up with a truly valid reason that they can defend by law of why I cannot play baseball on the regional league, then she was going to show up Monday morning with a camera crew and they can explain it to them. And like her taking that stand, I was like, I didn't understand the impact that I was kind of spearheading, but my mom was leading that charge.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And to see like that sticks with me in everything that I do. People have told me all the time, no, you can't do that. No, like, you can't be an athlete. Mm-hmm. No, you can't do NASCAR. No, you can't. I'm like, watch me. And it's because of that moment.
I like that. That's pretty cool. I like that you can pinpoint exactly that moment from your mom basically saying, I mean, what she's basically doing is saying, hey, here's rules, but life isn't about rules and following rules. It's about finding a way. That's what I tell my fighters also. We don't choose we don't choose who's the baddest guy in the room. You're the baddest guy in the room because you can beat up everyone in the room. Mm-hmm. And what does it take to get there? It's different for every single person. And, you know, it's not like, oh, today we're going to have Cody Garbrandt. You will be the baddest man in the room. No, this is something that he decides, and there's going to be obstacles for him. There's going to be obstacles for this person, and the best will find a way. They'll meander around and make adjustments, and that's something that carries over to business. It carries mm-hmm. over to relationships. It carries over to everything. You know, just that thinking big and not taking no for an answer can accomplish a lot.
So much.
So I mean, much.
It takes down all the walls, the imaginary walls. We are only limited by our own mind, right? Mm-hmm. So people ask me, they're like, Christmas, what makes a badass? I'm like, your mindset makes you badass.
Absolutely.
And that's it.
Oh, it's all
like,
mindset.
You don't that's have it. To be the strongest yep. dude in the room. Mm-hmm. You can come in and just dominate by your presence or whatever it is that you want to own. Just own it unapologetically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
And start flipping tables.
I'm like, don't flip the podcast. This thing weighs like 600 pounds.
We're gonna mini wreck. We're gonna wreck this place.
Jason's like,
watch out, Jason. We're coming after you.
So funny. Now, one of the things I actually want to compliment you on, talking about the conduit for reaching millions of people, is, you know, we obviously work with a huge amount of influencers, and I think you do a very good job with your influence of getting, you know, a little bit deeper in your posts, like talking, you know, more directly about that type of stuff where, mm-hmm. you know, obviously you've got a lot of fans in our office here because of it, but you're generally putting out, you know, a huge amount of positivity and at the same time, you know, tactical stuff. And it's overall just kind of focused on that vibe of you being a conduit of like empowering hundreds of thousands and millions of people by consistently putting that message out, but doing it in a way that's not like, you know, go out and get motivated today. You know what I mean? You're like talking about, yeah, this crazy shit happened to me and I've, you know, learned from it and adapted my mindset and, you know, did this because of it. I mean, a lot of your posts are like more fleshed out, in-depth posts that aren't just like, oh, I'm at this cool party or this event or whatever. Oh, I'm hanging out with these celebrities, blah, 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 blah. It's like you're actually going out and directly, you know, empowering people with your platform, which I really like.
Yeah, and candor. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a book called Winning by Jack Welch. It's a really good book. It's mm-hmm. about executives. He was a, you know, big-time influencer, yep. GE, General Electric, and ran that for a lot of times. And he talks about one of his big keys for success is candor. And that's, you know, being candid with other people, you can mm-hmm. you can miss a bunch of drama and you know, things that can arise if you don't do it. But I think being candid about your story is something that's super influential also. I mean, not many people want to tell the crappy parts of their life.
Exactly.
Like, oh, I had this happen, I had that happen. It takes a special somebody to wear what they've done, learn from it, and say, look, this is what happened, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I'm still learning from it, to be honest. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier, is like 2017 was top one of the worst years of my life, hands down. Like it was
really?
and one of the reasons I'm becoming more open and vulnerable through my social media is because, you know, I have that platform, but that's what got me started with sharing my original story. Mm-hmm. And now my story has evolved to like a very personal recent experience where 2017, and I told you briefly, is that I dealt with an engagement breakup. I dealt with a very, very close friend, ODing on heroin and going into rehab. And then once I started kind of piecing my life back together, I went on Big Brother. You're in social isolation. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to write. I wasn't able to read. I wasn't able to, you know. And then on Big Brother, I broke my foot. So my biggest form of therapy, which was fitness, was taken away from me. And coming out of the house, I was real shell-shocked. And it's not because of Big Brother. It's just because of these sequences of events that just were traumatizing. One individual of those is enough for a year or a lifetime, you know? And so I was just like, guys, fans, look, I know I'm happy-go-lucky, like a shit rainbows. I want to be your inspiration, but I'm in a dark place right now. Mm-hmm. And I had to be real candid about how I was working through that, because that was one of my therapies, was to share my story as I was going through it. And just to let people know, like, you can be uber successful in life and have this dark cloud over your life in the moment. You don't always have to be lucky, or I mean, don't always have to be happy and show that positive, happy side. Mm-hmm. I think that it shows strength in vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I've been really harping on this concept of grit and grace. It's not separate, it's together. And, you know, in order to get through the hard times, you have to have that grit. But in order to find gratitude, you have that grace. Mm-hmm. And it will serve you well.
Grit and grace and
that's gonna be
shitting
your
rainbows.
Yeah. Shitting rainbows. These are all t-shirt ideas. Book. Yeah, third
book. Do you have
book.
A clothing line yet? Because we have two solid, solid pictures. I don't know if we would actually put a picture of you shitting rainbows. We could do it.
Well, yeah, we're gonna edit there's that a picture into of me YouTube. Riding yeah. a unicorn and it's pooping out all of this rainbow cloud on Big Brother, one of the last competitions that I did. I had to ride a unicorn and it's like pooping or like farting rainbow dust, fairy dust into my face. So,
okay, this is a good rainbows. Idea. There's actually a company, and I'll hook you up afterwards, and Greg and I will take a little cut of it, but there's a company called Represent, and they do like these flash sales. I think some shitting rainbow shirts
would be
and some grit and grace
for sure
would be some good little flash sale things. We make some pretty penny on that.
I like that.
We'll talk about it. Yes. Always looking for the business edge in here.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I like it.
Collab.
We can do that.
Yeah, so you got to give us, I know people are going to hate us if we don't get some behind the scenes. So give us, what's something that happened on Big Brother that nobody knows about that you can share?
I don't know. So one, I haven't watched it back yet. I haven't been able to separate my personal experience of what actually happened and then like the way it's produced. Now, I have no idea.
I hear there's some real personal experience. Did you go in the confession box and say you fell in love on there?
No, I did not fall in love. I didn't go in the confession
box.
Did
you say that?
I had a crush. But if you're 24/7 with somebody for 92 days, something's happening.
Okay. Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And that person was?
If you're a Big Brother fan, then you know.
Who was it, Shannon? Give us the
was
it
Paul?
I had a crush on Paul. Like yeah. He's, you know, like he's loud, obnoxious. But I mean, we're best of friends. We still keep in contact. We were just texting yesterday. Josh and I are still very close. Alex and I, Jason. Everybody's like, Jason broke her foot. He didn't like attack me and body slam me and break my foot in half intentionally. I jumped on his back for a piggyback ride, and the piggyback ride went wrong. So. That's
funny. Well, you know, as long as you're in the limelight, people are going to be like interpreting and causing drama no matter what. So if they want to, they're going to find reasons to get mad at people. And
I know. So like, I heard of all this. They were like, "Oh my gosh, she's engaged!" And like, I was like, "I was before." Thanks, guys. A little salt on the wound. Yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff that comes out. I don't know what I can tell you.
What happened there with the engagement? This is part of the terrible year. Are you good to talk about it?
Yeah.
I like drama.
Well, I mean, honestly, this breakup was kind of really vanilla in the way. Like, we just were in different spots, and we love each other very much. We're still very close friends. He moved to California. I stayed in North Carolina. And it did not work. Mm-hmm. That's okay.
No, that is life, absolutely.
I think, you know, some of the themes here are obviously, you know, pushing through adversity, thinking big, which you see in a lot of successful people, general fitness, good health is true wealth. I mean, talk about a story of fitness and health changing somebody's life, but just deciding to do it. I mean, too many times people forget they can decide things and manifest things into happening. And I love the story of just making that decision. And you made a decision in a negative way after a car accident. It was rough. You know, you made a decision in a positive way after being in a near-death experience, really, when you're out fighting in a war. And then talked about family, not being perfect. And I always emphasize mm-hmm. that because people – it's easy to look at a family or look at a situation and be like, oh, they've got a perfect thing going on. There's always some skeletons in the closet or behind the scenes.
Every family.
And then
yeah.
there's some families that just have it all out there, like the Kardashians, for example, where you're like, holy smokes, that's a messed up situation. But, you know, in a place where you didn't have a lot of money, you're sharing beds, you had to make fires for warmth, but you have this strong mother who's teaching you the most valuable lesson in life about fighting for what you want and about not letting obstacles stop you. So that's pretty cool. I feel like there needs to be another book written.
I know. Well, are we going to call it?
We'll call it
Grit and
Christmas.
Grace.
Yeah. Grit and Grace.
With a little unicorn shitting.
Well, shitting rainbows.
With, yeah, rainbow poop.
And we'll have you on the cover with rainbow shit, like Indian war paint.
I get it. I like it. Okay. Yeah. There's definitely one. There's a business one that I'm working on. That's probably not going to be published for a while, but you know, I call it tennis balls in a dryer because that's how my brain works. I'm a very ADD. I'm like all over the place. So that structure and focus that we were talking about earlier really, really helps me. And that's why I did so well in training, because like I thrive on structure and focus on structure. And as soon as I was able to implement that into my life and know how to implement it and hold on to it, that's when everything else started flourishing. Just committing to myself and investing in myself. And so tennis balls in a dryer, you'll see that I go off topic a lot. But I've been definitely working on a memoir, and I feel like at this point I'm much more open to all of the details versus just like, well, here's enough for you to know that I had some trouble in my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, nope, I'm going to tell you exactly what happened now.
That's funny. I think, yeah, when you look at that kind of stuff, I mean, it is important now that you have a platform to let folks know, because it's so easy to look at the end result or the current result and forget about all the things that happened on the backside of things.
Yeah, know? And I think people connect with that a lot more too, because, you know, you're obviously things are, you know, not perfect in your life, but they're going very well. And a lot of people are at that kind of earlier stage where they're deep in the struggles and they're going, where the fuck is the light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, there
you know,
is no light.
And that, you know, I think that's always hugely helpful to show them that, you know,
I'll
they can't
tell
pull
you,
out.
We were talking about this earlier too, is that, you know, out of all of the trouble and the BS that I've had to endure and get through and carry with me, you know, that baggage that you carry with you, the scars, it's been worth it, because I remember 3-4 years ago, I was doing an appearance at regionals at CrossFit, and this girl came up to me, and she was teen. She's like 95 pounds. She's like, look, I don't do CrossFit. She's like, I got a day pass to be here. And she was in rehab for methamphetamines.
Oh, wow.
And she told me that hearing my story inspired her to go and get the help that she was seeking right then. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, with that, I mean, like, that's one of my favorite stories of all time. I was like, I just cried and I just hugged her, and we sat there and everybody else wait. Like, there was a line for a meet and greet. And I was like, this is why I share what I share. Like, so all of that was worth it to help save her life. And then I get pretty regularly people reach out and say, hey, look, especially with the breaking of the foot, and to see that, yeah, I was in a hard, dark place and I was in a hard time and I was trying to find my positive, but I was pushing forward no matter what. And, you know, I had a lot of bad days, a lot of dark days, a lot of dark thoughts. And, you know, you just hold on to what you know, and you know that eventually there will be a light, even if you can't see it right now. And a lot of people responded to that, and they said that it helped them out of their depression. It helped them to get back into a routine, or to find fitness, or even to mostly just want to love themselves. And that it's a relief for people to know that other people that are in our status, you know, that seemingly have this perfect, beautiful, easy life, struggle, and that it allows them to feel a little bit more human, and that there's bigger possibilities for them that they haven't found yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is important. It humanizes people. I think that's one of the biggest things when our team comes together, Team Alpha Male, we have a mixture of kids that have possibly been training with us since they're 9. Then you have that are, you know, now 21, 22, 23. Then we have people that come from all over the globe and all over the U.S. to be a part of things. You have professionals that are at the highest level, world champions and top contenders, and they're all pushed together. And it, a lot of times, the guys that are coming in, it's just an identifier that, like, oh, shoot, this guy's a world champion. This is Cody Garbrandt and Chad Mendez and, you know, Uriah Faber. and we're all breaking bread together. We're all doing the same things. They're human. Everybody's bleeding together. Everybody's sweating together, have good days and have bad days. And that realization that we're all just people, we're all equals, and we're all vulnerable is a super important thing for folks to understand, to realize, look, anything can be accomplished in this world. And obviously you've had these little successes that turn into big successes that turn into, you know, a platform to influence people. What are some of the things that you're thinking of and wanting next, aside from a move to California and finding that handsome California stud to settle down with? what is next? What are some of the things that you're inspired, have been inspired to try to attain next? Like, what are the goals? What are the processes? What are the things you're trying to do now?
You know, a lot like Trifecta Systems, I'm so excited that you guys are doing what you do, because I want to be able to reach the masses. So instead of teaching or coaching the high level athlete, I'm like, no, I want to get to the person that never thought, like I was, never thought that health or wellness would be prominent in their mm-hmm. life. So with that concept in mind and my mantra, I've designed my companies to support each other, overlap each other, and to reach as many people as possible, the everyday person. Right. And that's what I love. I love the everyday person. And the moment, sometimes there's this magic moment where you see the light bulb, the aha moment of like, oh my gosh, I am capable. Yeah. And that you can, like, all right, you're unstoppable now.
Yeah.
Get mm-hmm. after it.
This magic moment.
So through that, I've been doing, you know, the BBX program, my online training program is fairly popular. And people go in with, you know, the intention to change their body, modify their body, and immediately they find their confidence. That is the biggest response. It's like, hey, I went in this program because I wanted to get an aesthetic change, but instead I got a lifestyle change. And by that, also a beautiful byproduct of a better body. I've launched a supplement line called Born Relentless, and it's BORN. So the concept is that you are born relentless. And it's, again, that mindset that going forward, I did this because I got tired of sorting through and reading labels and putting something into my body that I didn't like. And so I took control. The ingredient list and the combination is mine alone. And I've worked with a scientist and I was like, this is the stuff that I want. These are the things that I want them to elicit. And I don't want all this long list of naughty things. And so that just launched. The protein is coming out this month. It's delicious. I had to get on a waiting list to get for my protein source. It's whey-based. It's New Zealand grass-fed, free-range cow, like top of the line. I was the like, I don't quality. Care what our what our expenses are, you know, like what our take-home gross rev is. I don't care, as long as we get what I am proud of. And then the third thing that I'm super excited about, which is like the three pillars of Christmas Abbott, is I'm launching an online coaching nutrition platform.
Cool.
And it's so exciting. It has a scan feature where you can scan your food and it automatically populates what's on your plate.
Oh,
and so
wow.
You just add it immediately. And so here I wanted like a grandma that had never touched an iPhone know be able to use this really, really quickly and easily, and to track your food. I don't like tracking my food because I don't like to put the information in there. You have to hunt and search 1,000 different things. And so finally when you get it, you're like, is this really accurate? So we've been working with the company for, this has been a 2-year endeavor that we're getting ready to launch in the next 2 months. And I'm real proud of it.
So you got awesome. A lot going on. And do you think you're going to go back on TV soon, or maybe?
Well, I don't get to make that decision, and they don't tell you until like right before, because they want it to be a super big secret. But I'm hoping that Big Brother thinks that I a good enough character to return, because I mean, I literally broke my foot in 2 weeks, so I was out of every physical competition.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah. I mean, take my livelihood away from me. And I went on there because it was a competition, you know. I wanted the challenge. I didn't care about the fame or exposure. I already had a really good following before then, with super amazing dedicated fans. Thank you guys, love you. and I just want to go and just wreck Christmas Havoc, like really just.
Is that going to be your dark side personality, Christmas Havoc?
I can't. Well, there's Creepy the Christmas. That was really popular, which is like real Christmas. Like, I am kind of creepy. Like, I'm going to invade your personal space, you've make you feel awkward.
Hey, we've seen it. We've all seen it. So that's cool. I mean, when I talked about some of the things that you're moving towards in the future, there's a lot of business in what you do. Is that something that you have help with? Just I know for me, being an entrepreneur, which is an important part of my identity now, it just kind of happened, like seeing a need, feeling a need, not being afraid to attack it, and then learning along the way. You know, you always talk about or you always are known for the things that made it because people know about them, but how many failures are there in different business things, you know? I mean, there's so many as entrepreneurs, and Greg can attest to that as well, but not that Greg fails very often.
Not recently.
But, you know, the business acumen, is that something that you also got from your parents or you learned along the way, and how has it been going?
You know, it's funny because when me and my sister were little girls, we'd go to my grandma's house and she had a whole bunch of post-it notes and markers and pencils, and we would pretend to make a store with inventory, and like she would place orders and I would fulfill them. So wow. I've always been interested in business, and it just so happened that when I got into fitness, shortly after I got into business, just because it was it's a natural evolution, where for me at least, not all athletes have that sort of foresight, where I knew that as an unathletic athlete, my time in the spotlight was going to be fast and short. And I actually, which is normal, like a 3-year shelf life for a pro athlete, I was able to ride it out almost 7 years. So I was able to get a lot more.
Where are you getting that stat
that.
On the 3 years?
It's usually NFL.
Yeah, NFL's yeah. 3 years.
But
average.
I mean, if you think about I mean, that's like high level, peak performance, pro.
Right.
You're getting paid for what you do.
Which is also interesting from a business standpoint. You know, the business heads that put together all these things are aware of these different little details. 3 years in the NFL is a good time to cut them off, because if they get to 4 years, then they get the pension, which lasts a lifetime. So they try to get them out of there if they're not going to be not going to be – if there's somebody that can take their place, you don't have to pay for the rest of their life.
Do it. Yeah.
Do it. That's what that's what's happening, which is interesting, because it makes it harder. It makes it tougher, and it reminds you that sport, entertainment, and business are all in one. Mm-hmm. It really is.
And they don't care about your liveliness.
No.
Yeah.
At least not in the NFL. Yeah.
So I saw that, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to take this spotlight and run with it. And really everything that I've produced was because the fans have asked for it. My nutrition seminars, which spawned into my book, was because everybody was asking me about what do I eat and how do I train? And I was like, well, the training is kind of obvious. This is what I do. But the nutrition, I just assumed everybody knew because I was so late to the game.
Right.
You know, I was like last kid to the party. Like, well, I'm assuming everybody else is drunk.
You think you're
nope. You going home with
the alcohol.
With a guy that's out of your league, but he's too drunk to know.
Yeah. Well, you think it's that way, but I mean, we just obviously we looked at the stats, and it's like, you know, there's a huge ways to go in the nutrition game. Yeah. There's just it's America is not healthy right now.
Yeah, we need to get it together.
I'm excited. So who's the company that you're doing your supplement brand with, or are you just starting from scratch your own thing?
So I paired up with a manufacturer and supplier, and so it's my line.
Wow,
it's
really?
Yeah.
Well, I have a
they did the fulfillment. They helped me create the recipes, and you know, it's mine.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have a supplement company that I'm a part of, Purus Labs, and there's actually my partners have a whole factory in Texas where they manufacture all the stuff, and you know, maybe you can cut
my
some
people are in Texas.
I know. I wondered if they were the same people for a second there.
Yeah. We'll check it out.
Yeah.
We can't disclose that information, guys.
Yeah.
that's an after show combo.
And so in the future, I know Greg has aspirations of having a family eventually, right? Is that true?
Yep, probably end of this year we're going to start trying. So.
I only know that because I was talking about going to Mexico and some of these other places, and Greg and his lovely wife, who's way out of his league, to be honest.
She's a smoke wagon.
Yeah.
Good
Dr.
job.
Conley.
Wow.
She.
You're welcome.
They were talking about not going to Mexico and not going to Brazil and the other places because of?
Zika.
Yeah. Which is crazy to think about because I wasn't thinking. I would like to have some kids, you know, in the somewhat near future, possibly. We'll see.
Uriah just turned 25.
Yeah, that mosquito, I mean, can basically affect your
you can. It stays in your system for 2 years, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But anyways, how about you? You want to have some kids one day, or what's the vision there? Is that part of the Christmas plan?
So the funny thing is that when I was aware of, I'm going to disclose my age in a minute. When I was aware that I had this legacy that I wanted to build, I was in my late 20s and starting to hustle, like getting ready to build a gym and doing boot camps to get money to build the gym, complete grassroots endeavor. And I knew that I was going to have to postpone family and children to be able to accomplish what I wanted to do that was bigger than me. And now that I've kind of gotten into that and it's starting to run itself in a way, the hustle's still there, but now I'm looking around and I have a little bit more time on my hands. I have a little bit more security in my life and bigger things that I want to accomplish, and that includes a family. I'd like a biological child, but I also know that I want to adopt, whether it's foster to adopt. I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite there yet, but I am literally this year looking into, you know, freezing my eggs, looking at my fertility rate, and I don't have a boyfriend.
Like, that's good. You're thinking about it, though.
Very single.
Man, you've manifested a lot of things in your life. I'm sure you can find a dude around here somewhere.
Yeah, we're actually going to start a competition on the website.
And I'm sorry, Jason is already taken, unfortunately. I know you're looking across there at that handsome devil behind the camera. He's already taken.
Good to know. I like knowing where the red tape is.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you do look for the ring when you're my age. You're like, oh, nope.
Yeah.
Don't even want to have a conversation with you. north of that moral compass.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, it's cool that you do want to adopt. And the reason for that is, do you have a particular reason? You just want to give back? And
I mean, they're
you become just a do-gooder all the way around, which is awesome.
I know. She's making us look bad over here.
Well, I mean, selfishly, I do want a little mini me. I want to see a little baby badass Christmas, you know? Yeah. Like, how cool is that to see you right there as another human, and you get to form a lot of them, but then they're like, no, this is the way I am. Yeah. And it's just so cool.
You
want to
call the football coach and say, hey, my daughter is going to be the quarterback of the team, or else.
And guess what? This is like foreshadowing her future, like making his, you know, it's pretty cool. So I'd like to have a family sooner than later.
That's cool. That's awesome. Well, I think, you know, we've got to know Christmas quite a bit more in depth, which is awesome for me, especially. I'm getting more and more in tune. As an athlete myself, who's recently retired, it's real easy just to be focused on my own stuff. So it's cool to pick the brains of industry leaders that are doing big things. Not only are you a beautiful lady, you're got an awesome story about, you know, grinding and getting knocked down and getting back up. You're a businesswoman, which this is a big part of our podcast. We're talking about entertainment. You're on TV shows. You're in competitions. You are a worldly woman. So thank you for spending a little of your time with Greg and I, who, you know, Greg's always itching to get back and start crunching numbers and go back to doing some business. But it's fun to take a little break and get to know and spend some time.
I kidnapped her earlier this morning to do the number crunching. So
awesome.
We had a great session. I loved it.
That's awesome. We're always learning. So thanks always again, guys. Anything else Christmas you'd like to ask us or get off your chest before you go? Any confessions?
That's a whole nother thing. But okay. I wanted to.
We'll bring her back.
You're recently retired. I'm going to hijack this for a minute. Okay. You're recently retired, and I understand. So, like, I'm curious about what your experience about athlete identification, like, you know, self-identity with coming out of a sport and then, like, whoa, that was your entire world. Mm-hmm. And because this happened to me a couple of years ago, year before last, where I had knee surgery and then I realized that I might not return. And then I had my foot broken. I'm like, holy cow, I'm not like done. You know, my spirit wasn't done, but my body's like having a negotiation.
Right.
And winning that negotiation. So a lot of people have reached out to me specifically about your identity crisis.
Yeah, your identity crisis.
Going from one to the other. And you were really fortunate that you had a great business mentor and, you know, the platform to be able to set that transition up. But and I was fortunately too, but I think that I'm just curious about, like, if did you have some of that anxiety and freak out about not being an athlete anymore?
Well, for me, no. And that's just because, first off, I've been doing it a long time. And it's a very, as you know, a very rough way to make a living as a CrossFit athlete. But even more when you're fighting guys on a daily basis, you know, ranging from age of 17 to 40, you know, you're fighting these guys on a daily basis. So I still get to do some workouts that test me and push me, but just not when I don't want to. And I also had an awesome exit. So my last fight was coming off a win. Yeah. It was in my hometown in a you know, the arena that has kind of helped save Sacramento as a community. And I was the first, you know, the first MMA fight there, and it was my last fight. So I feel like I had a lot of like great closure as an athlete. And then I also have, like you talked about, wanting to do something that's bigger than yourself.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do that as well. I have a book as well, Laws of the Ring, which is a motivational memoir type of book. And then I have my team and I help manage guys. And so I'm pretty entrenched in the mixed martial arts community still, on top of being an entrepreneur and, you know, learning from guys like Greg, learning from guys like my EO group, learning wherever I can on the next phase of things is exciting for me, but I still get a little taste of mixing it up. I was in running practice this morning. I'm going to go do practice tonight.
Yeah.
And fit in this type of stuff. So the identity is still there. I always feel bad for folks that aren't able to create an identity, you know, bigger than just what they've done, and also create a revenue stream that's bigger than competing as an athlete, because it can be scary, especially in the fight game.
And you have to do that while you're in it. You always have to start that as soon as you're in it. I think a lot of people miss that boat. They're like, no, I have to focus on being an athlete. I have to focus on my skill, my craft. And the money will come. Well, the money comes if you work for the money.
Exactly.
You know, you have to create that. You know, it just doesn't show up at your front door.
Yeah.
But also that helps, you know, you had such a great exit where a lot of athletes get it ripped away from via injury.
Injury, or they stay in too long, especially you see it in the fight game where, you know, you're fighting, you know, the more money you get, the more money you're going to spend, the more you're going to pay in taxes, the more used to, especially I was an athlete for 14 years professionally. So, you know, you get used to every couple months, you get a big paycheck, et cetera. And it's easy to live outside your means and things like that. So you have to curb that pretty early on. And a lot of guys don't do it. So they're constantly chasing a paycheck. And for me, I wasn't like an athlete that got paid millions and millions of dollars every year, but I was mindful when I started in the sport, I had to be creative in order to even compete because the sport wasn't there yet. I was fighting on Indian casinos and fighting, you know, guys out of my weight class and making a couple $100 and selling tickets to make $1,000 and selling t-shirts. I had to do that in order to fund my passion. And then it became something, like you said, where the money came. So I learned hard lessons throughout that career to where I knew I couldn't be a guy that is chasing a paycheck, even though they're really nice and it's fun to do. You know, the fight game, I need my brain in the next phase of things. I need my body working. I need to be able to think and network and focus on the next phase. Otherwise,
longevity.
You know, yeah, otherwise I'm going to go down in a ball of flames. You know, I don't want to get my head knocked until I can't barely think anymore.
Yeah.
So that was part of it for me. And I could always jump back in if the right opportunity, if somebody pisses me off and they pay me a big check, I still am sharp and ready to do that. So, that was an easy transition, but it's still very tempting.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think for both of you, like the competitive aspect, I mean, business still provides that, you know, you guys are still competing to build your personal brands, to build your businesses, et cetera. And it's not,
I argue it doesn't really, feed
it's not
my
quite
soul.
The yeah, same. Like, yeah, exactly. But
you don't get to eat souls in business. Not yet, at least. You know, like, we're trying to do good things.
you know, the biggest difference for me in that, cause I do, there's a lot of similarities, especially in a fight game where business is like that. Sometimes you're fighting, you have to be creative, you have to surround yourself with the right people, you have to be consistent and persistent and all these different things that happen in the fight game as well. The difference is you can't have a defining moment where you can either beat somebody up or not beat them up. You know, I mean, when you're talking about business, there's so many factors and it's not that simple. I mean, that's a simple way to solve a problem is like, you and I are going to fight, we're going to find out who the baddest dude is. business is not as tricky. So getting that final release or getting the anxiety down about a situation or being able to just leave it all on the table is not always there for business. So that's an interesting kind of dynamic where, you know, you can't just compete and either won or you lost. It's like a constant tweaking and a constant this and a constant that, and it's a constant battle. One wrong move in some businesses and you can put yourself in a bad situation. So it is fun, but it's very similar, but the difference is no clean cut, this is it, move on to the next thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Pass or fail.
Yeah.
It's not, there's a lot of gray area.
Yeah.
And you know, for an athlete, I don't do well with the gray area, but I have to have a different mindset with business. And I'm aggressive in my business, but I'm not nearly as like, okay, this is the goal buy win date. Like that's nice, but it does not work out that way. It's not like going to a competition. You know, that day you're going to perform. These are all the factors that you can control. There's so many more unknown variables that surface with business than with athletics.
Yeah, and this is something that I've been giving a lot of thought to also as of late, and talking to guys that understand the game and also focusing on my next phase of things, because I, you know, as an athlete who's doing business, who's doing TV shows and all these other opportunities are coming. You've got your supplements, you've got your books, you've got your coaching. It's easy to get pulled in different directions, which is easy to handle when things are going smoothly. When things start falling in one direction, you know, you're juggling all these balls, it's all nice and fun, and then, you know, you need to grab one ball, you drop the rest of them, right? Mm-hmm. That can happen, and I'm learning that, and so it becomes a thing where I have to focus and say, okay, what can I do? What is going to be my main focus? And for me, I've got a lot of interest in entertainment, producing on top of being on camera for stuff, and it's been fun kind of like choosing what are my new passions. I know I love real estate. I know I love the fight game. Like what things can I leave on autopilot, still be involved with, mm-hmm. but where do I eventually want to go? And that's been a fun process for me. I mean, real estate is something I love to go back to, and I like the entertainment stuff. It's super interesting to me. It's like a fight game where I can prep for a fight. You have the fight and it's over, and then you either take another fight or you go do something else. And I'm always trying to find ways to emulate that lifestyle for myself.
They're like shorter seasons instead of just one long marathon.
Yeah. It's having a job versus being an entrepreneur, really, is what it is. So,
entrepreneurs are just for people with severe ADD just like to work a lot.
And go-getters. So that's been kind of a cool interaction for me. And Greg, I know right now you've been sole focused on you know, one business, but there's so many different parts of it mm-hmm. that become, you know, we've got an online platform. We've got, you know, the podcast that we're doing. Mm-hmm. You've got these different aspects that you're doing. It's kind of a reminder of, you know, juggling a lot of balls is great, but you have to really be doing things in your passion. Otherwise, it's not going to.
A lot of people ask me, they're like, how do you get into so many different things? Or how did you figure out what you wanted to do? One, you try new things, right? Be willing to get out of your comfort zone. There's like an idea of, you'll have an idea of how you're going to like it or not like it, right? That's the pre-perceived experience. And then I tell people, I'm like, have an educated experience, have an actual experience, and then you can say whether or not you like it. And so that gives people a little bit more direction. But with what you're talking about and what I've done with my balance, you know, juggling everything, is that initially in the very beginning, I knew what my goal was. So my goal was to create this legacy. And then when decision, you know, you have this opportunity management, you know, your opportunity creation, that's when you're saying yes to everything. Yes, 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 yes. You're opening more doors, you're getting exposure. And then at that point, you don't really care if you're doing something that's going to be working towards that goal, that ultimate end goal, right? The top of your legacy, because you're just kind of in the grind. And then once you get enough opportunity doors open, you go into opportunity management. And mm-hmm. that's when you start saying no. And it's easy to evaluate an opportunity or something that comes up in front of you if it is going to enhance or help you towards that main goal, that legacy. And if it doesn't, then it's easy to say no to. So if you don't mm-hmm. have that kind of end game direction, then it's easy to get lost and easy to get like torn over here, where like something is going to pay really well,
but it's nowhere near, and it's going to offset you going towards your actual right. goal. So I tell people, I'm like, look, the biggest thing that you can do is sit down and say, you know, describe your legacy. And I talk about this in the book, describe your legacy, and then work backwards. Make that blueprint, but make it fluid enough that you can pivot and change, you know, in motion, or, you know, you're not so stuck on something that you're fighting against yourself the entire time. And that is, that happens when you're at a dichotomy of you're saying yes to things that aren't letting you work towards your legacy or your goal.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I love that mentality. That's really cool. I don't want to take all your time here. Greg, I know you need to get back to work.
Guys, you're going to feed me some traffic.
Yeah, we get. Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to grab something too. But thanks again, Christmas, for giving us a little insight into your life, yeah. giving some inspiration and some things for us to look forward to. We're always talking business here. We're talking nutrition. We're talking sport. We're talking entertainment. This is the Cali Cast. Greg Conley, my co-host here. Thanks again for tuning in, guys, and we'll be back.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.